This episode is brought to you by Windrose Recovery, a family of premier addiction treatment programs in southeastern Wisconsin. Privately owned, Windrose Recovery offers a full continuum of personalized care for those struggling with addiction, including the Manor for residential treatment, Midwest Detox for inpatient detoxification, and Windrose Counseling for outpatient treatment. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantel Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love is struggling with addiction, call Windrose Recovery at 414-409-5300. You can learn more about Windrose Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting WindroseRecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of the show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Evan Struzand, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
Nowhere to run, nothing to hide from the government's prying eye. Take yourself a summer holiday.
The Path to Authenticity proudly supports the I Speak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit ispeakmedia.org. If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. So before I get into things, I just want to ask for some support from you guys. Just trying to build this audience here, turn this show into something that can bring in a little bit of money, enough to where I can devote more time to it. I really love doing this. So, a couple ways that you could help, if you're willing, please join the podcast community mailing list. There's a link in the show notes. Promise not to inundate you with a bunch of junk. Maybe one email a month, and I'll try to keep it relevant. The other thing is, if you'd be willing to leave a rating or a review or both in one of two places. First of all, Apple Podcasts. If you have an Apple device, please leave a review there. Be a huge help. If you use an Android device or you listen on some other platform, if you could go to Podchaser, that would be a good place for you to leave a review, as a lot of the other platforms don't enable you to do that. Every little bit helps. I appreciate your support. So, episode 109 for February 9th, 2021, the day that the second impeachment trial of Donald John Trump is set to begin. On this day in 1773, William Henry Harrison was born. He later became the first United States president to die while he was in office. In 1825, the House of Representatives elected John Quincy Adams, the sixth president of the United States. In 1861, Jefferson Davis was elected president of the Confederate States of America. In 1914, the Texas troubadour Ernest Tubb was born. Today's guest is a Texan, too. In 1916, conscription began in the UK as the Military Service Act became effective. In 1944, the novelist Alice Walker was born. In 1953, the French destroyed 6 Viet Minh war factories hidden in the jungles of Vietnam. In 1964, the U.S. Embassy in Moscow was stoned by Chinese and Vietnamese students. In 1978, Canada expelled 11 Soviet spies. In 1994, Nelson Mandela became the first black president of South Africa. And on this day, Joe Pesci is 77 years old, and Charlie Day is 44. Charlie Day is a guy who I could see wearing one of this guest's robes. Evan Struzand is the owner and co-founder of Highway Robbery, which he's going to tell you all about in this episode. It's something I came across an ad and started to read a little bit about the company that Evan and his wife started, and it's a pretty cool story, and I like what they're doing. So I hope you enjoy it. I did. We had a nice conversation. Definitely someone I'd like to talk to again. So here you go, Evan Struzand. I noticed your company on Instagram, I don't know, maybe 2-3 months ago at this point. And I like the ads that you guys are doing on Instagram. Uh-huh. And the name of the company just kind of, I don't know, made me smile right away. And I was intrigued. Highway Robbery.
Yes.
Tell me about Highway Robbery.
Well, first off, I'm glad you got the name right, because a lot of people look at the word robbery and they just, their brain has trained them to think that it says highway robbery.
Yeah.
Which is funny. So I'm always appreciative when people actually get it. But yeah, Highway Robbery is a business that my wife and I started about 4 years ago, and we make robes. We basically use pre-existing fabrics, sometimes known as dead stock fabrics. And we use those fabrics to create kind of fun and colorful robes. And the robes are gender neutral, and they're all currently available just in one size. So we are primarily like an online retailer. We sell direct to consumer, and we are having a lot of fun with it. It's been a pretty fun project, and I hope it shows with the stuff that we put out.
Well, the patterns, they're fun patterns. I mean, yeah, they're not, if you go shopping for a robe in a department store, it's not something that you would find there. They're all very unique, right?
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. If you go to a department store, you're going to get like a terry cloth, kind of plain white something, or
maybe plaid flannel.
Maybe a plaid flannel robe, which we actually do some plaid flannel stuff. But the patterns that we're using, we definitely try to bring color and kind of whimsy into the fabrics that we choose. And we definitely want it to feel like it's something unique and not something that you could just get anywhere. One thing about making the robes using dead stock fabrics is that we're kind of beholden to whatever fabrics are available to us. We're not like creating anything just from scratch, essentially, with regard to like the print or the fabric. So, we're basically looking at what's available out there and then picking the ones that we think are fun or, that people would like. So it's definitely something unique. And the other another cool thing is because we're using kind of fabric that already exists, you know, once a specific fabric is gone, like we're not making more of it. So, you know, all of our robes are kind of in that, you know, limited edition kind of vibe where, you know, you're getting something that there's only going to be so many made of. It's not just going to be like mass produced, like so many things.
I like that. So now tell me how this came about. You know, if I remember right, I read that you and your wife were on a weekend getaway or something like that when you came up with this idea.
Yeah, we had taken a trip. We drove out to West Texas a few summers ago, and the place where we stayed actually had some pretty colorful and fun robes that we ended up kind of wearing while we were there a lot. And we considered they sold them at their gift shop, and we considered buying them, but frankly, they were like very expensive, and we just didn't think it was really worth the price they were charging. So you know, we left and just kind of like didn't think too much about it for a little while. And then we were driving to Houston to visit my family, and we were in the car, and we kind of started talking about those robes again, and just kind of, I don't know, one thought led to another, and we basically decided like, why don't we try to make robes? We could make fun, colorful robes using different kind of fabrics. And we kind of thought of the whole brand, like the whole vibe, the, you know, the personality of it, on that car trip. And my previous, or, you know, still current other experience, with work is in fashion. And so I was pretty confident that we could figure out how to do this, relatively quickly. Like I was like, okay, I can figure out how to get these made, and we can, you know, we just need to figure out where we're going to source the fabrics from and yada, yada. But yeah, so we basically decided that we were going to give this a try, and I used the previous experience that I had, and we found someone pretty quickly that could make them for us. And through her, we found a great source for the fabrics that we use. We initially tried, actually my wife, Jackie, tried to make a prototype on her own. She can sew a little bit. And so she tried to make our original prototype, but quickly realized that it was above her pay grade, so to speak. So we found someone else out in California who could make them for us. And we just started from there. So we got a prototype made and built a website and took a few pictures, and Highway Robbery was born.
So now what kind of inventory do you have on hand at any given time, would you say?
Quantity? We keep a pretty light inventory. We like to turn over the robes pretty frequently, and so that we're not just like making a ton of the same thing. So, you know, it's in the hundreds of robes usually at a time, I would say. But then it dwindles pretty quickly. So, you know, there's times when we are like literally sold out of every robe that we have, and we're still waiting on new ones to be made. And that's usually just on us that's usually a mistake on our part that we didn't start production soon enough. But yeah, so it could be anywhere from literally zero to, you know, in a few hundreds at a time. Hmm.
So now you grew up in Houston, if I remember right.
Yes, correct.
And so how did you end up in the fashion industry?
Pretty randomly. I came to Austin for school to go to university. And then after school, I was very lost as far as what I wanted to do. I did not want a kind of like standard 9-to-5 job. I knew that wasn't the life for me. So after school, I was doing odd jobs, and eventually actually moved back home to Houston for a little while, and was working at a dinner theater in Houston, where they would put on like musicals basically while we served dinner to guests. It was a pretty fun job, actually, looking back. Always really enjoyed it there. But like while I was doing that, living in Houston, I knew I wanted to go travel some, and I had kind of set my sights on going to South America for a while. And So I worked and worked at the dinner theater, saved up money, lived at home, and eventually saved up enough to go, you know, spend a few months in South America, just kind of bumming around, basically. And towards the end of my trip in South America, I ended up in Cuzco, Peru, and I was taken to a local boot shop there that was selling these very, I would say, uniquely Peruvian boots. They were leather or suede mixed with like kind of traditional woven Peruvian looking textiles. And so I bought a pair of these boots and I had them for like 4 or 5 years and would wear them. I really like the way they look, and people would ask me about them. And years later, I was still living in Austin and I had moved back to Austin, and I was kind of trying to figure out what my next move was going to be, because I still didn't really have much direction. And I had always thought these boots were really interesting. And so I kind of decided I'm going to try to make these boots, and I'm going to build a business based on these boots. And so, really not knowing anything about fashion, or at least the fashion industry, I decided I'm going to go for it. You know, my naivete was like probably helpful in me actually taking the plunge, honestly. Right. But this is kind of before, I mean, the internet definitely existed, but it was still kind of tough to find anything. I looked and looked for boots like this online to see if anybody was already selling them, and I couldn't find anybody doing it. And so I literally was like, I'm going to take out a credit card and buy a plane ticket back down to Peru and go see if I can find someone to make these boots for me. And I'll just like import the boots, basically. And so I did that, went back down to Cuzco with a friend and found a boot shop making these boots, and basically said, I want to make 100 pairs of these boots and take them back with me to Texas. The only thing I knew about shoes at that point, or at least my instinct told me, was, you know, women are probably going to buy a lot more shoes than men. So I'm going to make women's boots. That was, that was really my brilliant insight. And so I did that. Yeah. And kind of started from there and just kind of taught myself the shoe business, basically, with that initial run of shoes, and took it from there. So that was how I got into fashion. And I still run that business. It's called Fortress of Inca. And the shoes we make are a lot different than the shoes we made then, but they're all still made by hand in Peru, you know, using nice materials and whatever. So that was my fashion intro.
Still only women's shoes?
Yeah, still only women's. We've dabbled in men's shoes a couple times over the years, and it frankly is just, it's kind of like starting a new business. You know, you have to do, it's new, it's a different production. It's like finding different manufacturing, basically. It's like different marketing. It's a lot. It's a lot more inventory. So we've made a couple runs of men's boots, and like, they've been cool, and I have them and, you know, wear them, but it's just never really proven worth like everything it would take. And it would take away a lot of resources from the other part of the business, which is just, you know, we're a small company. It's hard to do that. So
if you had to guess when you were, say, 12, what you would have been doing with your life at this age, what would you have guessed?
I would have probably guessed something maybe more in like film or music. Those are the things I really was into. I mean, sports would have been great, but I think I probably knew I wasn't a good enough athlete to to have any kind of career in sports. But it would be, yeah, it would be like film or music, or maybe like working in sports, but not like playing. Mm. It would have been something like that. I definitely always had a decent like fashion sense, I would say. I think I was voted best dressed in like seventh grade, but that was probably more thanks to my mom than me. So,
takes what it takes, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I will say that the women's shoe thing, I grew up with two younger sisters, and I think that gave me kind of an ease with women, I guess, in a way that made me more comfortable kind of like having a business where the product that we sell is, you know, sold to women, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I have 5 older sisters.
Oh, wow.
So I've always,
are you the youngest of, you're the youngest of 6?
I'm the youngest of 8, actually.
Oh, man. Older brothers. Oh, wow.
So I always, you know, I've always felt like that was an advantage to me in certain ways, to just have ease with which I interacted with women that, you know, not everybody does.
Yeah.
They don't feel as foreign to me.
I think it just gives you that.
I think they do to most guys, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It kind of gets, you know, it helps you to be able to walk in their shoes a little bit better than if you hadn't grown up around so many, like if you didn't have those sisters growing up. Yeah. Appreciate them. Yeah.
So, what kind of music are you into?
I mean, I don't want to be a lame, give a lame answer and say I love lots of, I mean, I love lots of kind of music, but, I was always really into Bob Dylan and, the Talking Heads and the Beatles and kind of the classic, you know, the all timers really. But, growing up, I was like, I think my parents were really into folk music. So early on, it was like Dylan, Peter, Paul and Mary. I think I then graduated like to the Beach Boys and the Beatles and Led Zeppelin. And then as I got a little bit older, it was really Dylan and the Talking Heads. And then, you know, more modern music, I would say like the White Stripes and, LCD Sound System and Kendrick Lamar, Stevie Wonder. Love Stevie Wonder. So,
well, I envy you, you know, that music scene out there. You know, I live in South Florida. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Texas, really. I mean, I've discovered spending a little time out there that it's, you know, there's kind of, Texas has its own little musical universe that's uniquely Texan.
It really does. It really does. And Houston, I mean, Houston, when I was growing up, like I was a teenager or in the 90s, basically. And like Houston had its own kind of rap sound that was pretty unique. And, you know, at the time, I think like rap music, especially, was a lot more regional. But so I grew up listening to the Ghetto Boys and UGK and, it's good. I like having that Texas influence in my blood a little bit. There's definitely a lot of things about Texas, like probably politically, that I don't,
Well, that's, you know, why you live in Austin, right?
Yeah, that's why I live in Austin, exactly. There you go.
Yeah. So have you lived anywhere else?
I've never lived, like, permanently. I've never lived outside of Texas. It's always been Houston, and then I moved to Austin for college, and then aside from that year or so when I moved back home and went to South America, I've been in Austin. So pretty much been in Austin since 1998, which... I always think about it because when I was starting the shoe company, I would travel a lot, trying to get the shoes into different stores around the country. And so I would take these trips, like I would go to the Northwest and spend a lot of time in Portland and Seattle and like even go up to Vancouver. You know, I've spent a lot of time in California, and also I would take trips to the Southeast, like Tennessee and North Carolina. I found, to be really good for the shoes and like trying to, there was a lot of good independent stores in those places. And so I've definitely spent like good quality time in a lot of these cities, and I was by myself. And so I was just kind of like getting lost in these places and, you know, having adventures. But I always just felt like Austin was it's a great city. It's beautiful. It has like the good parts of Texas, you know, people are nice. There's good barbecue, good Tex-Mex. It's warm. And so I just, as much as I feel like in a different life, if like I had gone some different path, I surely could have ended up living somewhere else. But I always just loved Austin. And so I just felt like I found a place I like to live. Like I don't need to, I'm not just going to move just for the hell of it. You know, but yeah. I feel good that I've been able to see and experience so much of the country and other countries, but I feel fortunate that I've gotten to experience a lot of different places and then know with certainty that, like, I feel good about the city that I chose to live in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've really, that is the only part of Texas that I've spent any time in, Austin, San Antonio, and places in between and around.
Yeah.
Those places. But I grew up in Indiana.
And, oh, where in Indiana?
A town called Kokomo.
Huh, okay.
Which is
like the terrible Beach Boys song. That one.
thanks for throwing the terrible in there. Yeah. Yeah. That's like one of those questions that I have sneered at for decades at this point. I kind of stopped. Like the Beach Boys song. Yeah, yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, it's spelled the same way. And when they played at the, you know, like the Miller Lite Amphitheater near me when I was a kid, like my high school cheerleaders appeared on stage with them. Kokomo High School. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a factory town.
Gotcha. And they made, what did they make there?
It's a big UAW town, United Auto Workers. So yep. Chrysler plants, GM plants, subsidiaries. So
how did you end up in Florida?
Well, you know, being a factory town, there are lots of bars. So there's, you know, the culture, really, there's a lot of drinking and partying and, you know, work hard, play hard stuff. And, you know, I grew up in a family with a lot of drinkers and I became one. And by the time I was 23, you know, it became a real problem. And so I had a sister in Florida who was in recovery from alcoholism at that point for about a year and, kind of lured me down to go to the same facility where she went. Mm. So I went through that process and where I live, it's kind of a place where people converge for that purpose. Mm-hmm. And at that time there was, a facility that still exists. But at that time it was probably one of the four or five best addiction treatment facilities in the world. And I went there and eventually, trained there after a couple of years. I got them to hire me. Mm-hmm. So trained as a counselor there, eventually started working in marketing, and I've pretty much been in the addiction treatment industry ever since on some level. So that's what I do by day. I'm an addiction counselor and mostly do private work with families and guys.
Can I ask you a question? So you had experience with alcoholism. And so when you're doing addiction counseling, are you primarily working with people that are kind of suffering from the same addiction, or do the lessons that you've learned from that also apply to people that might've had other drug addictions essentially?
Yeah. 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 Well, you know, and honestly, this podcast is another expression of it, of the work that I do, because, I've kind of concluded that addiction is a betrayal of oneself. You know, I mean, for me, the reason I nearly drank myself to death at 23 years old is because it was an existential crisis. You know, I wasn't being true to myself. I wasn't doing what I wanted to be doing for my life. I was trying to please other people or stay in their favor or whatever, family. And, you know, I just didn't have the self-esteem to say, yeah, screw you, I'm going to do whatever I want, you know, no matter what you think. And, you know, by the time I was, 19, 20 years old, I just felt completely stuck and lost and in a career that I didn't want. And I was working in construction, and you know, the wheels came off. And and so yeah, I went through a 12-step based program, and the 12 steps I'm a big believer in. You know, the principles that underlie them, I try to practice. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's the lessons from all that really could be used by anyone and can benefit anyone. And, you know, the whole to thine own self be true thing is a big part of that and sort of the foundation of that.
Yeah.
And when it came time to make this podcast, you know, I'd been a counselor and had worked in marketing, business development, PR in that industry for like 20 years at this point. And I had this book of business and I knew all these authors and experts, and I wanted to be able to leverage that and use it for the podcast, but I didn't want it to be specifically about addiction. So I started to think about what's a way that I can use all those things, but have it be more universal. And this is what I came up with, the path to authenticity. And it seems to have worked pretty well, you know, and over time I've, you know, to me, what I believe is, alcohol is just the method I use to try to deal with my distress.
Yeah.
My suffering. And, you know, at times it was other things. I mean, there, you know, there was pot and there was other stuff here and there. And for some people it's gambling or money or sex or love or just working too much or completely avoiding yourself. And, you know, ultimately it's just about your relationship with yourself.
Yeah. So it's using these things to distract you from having to kind of look inside yourself or deal with the person that you are.
Feel things. I mean, yeah. If you think about our culture, I mean, we really avoid feeling.
We really do.
And
at this point we avoid being alone with our own thoughts.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, it's like every time I have or not me necessarily, but a lot of people, every time there's a moment's pause, they pick up their phone and it's like, oh, I got something to distract me now. You know, I can't bear to sit here and think for 5 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. And I feel like the advent of the smartphone has really, I mean, I struggle with it all the time.
Sure.
Me just too. Out of habit. And the fact that it's designed to keep you hooked in doesn't help. It's, you know, it's just an impulse to, okay, I'm going to check this app. Now I'm going to check that app. And the next thing you know, half a day has gone by and I don't know what I've done with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't like that. So yeah. And, I feel like all of this also is part of why we are where we are in our society right now, because people are so lost and out of touch that, and not okay. Like, and
yeah,
you know, I mean, so I mean, why else would people like storm the US Capitol the way they did when, you know, we live in a pretty great country. I mean, if you know anything about the Constitution and you know anything about how envied it is by the remainder of the world, I mean, the self-sabotage, it's just insane. It's really weird.
Yeah. People have definitely, the internet for all of its positives has taken a hold of everyone's brains, I think. And, you know, it's so easy to go down little rabbit holes that can lead you to some dark places. And, you know, it also, I think in a way it's good because it can connect you to people. You know, like if I'm a fan of a certain team, I can find other fans of that team online.
Well, you and I wouldn't be talking right now if it didn't exist. I mean, this is an example of what's great.
Exactly.
About,
you know? Exactly. And my business, you know, the robes only exist because people are able to shop online. But I do think it also definitely speeds up a lot of some of people's worst kind of impulses. And like, I don't know. I think, I'll just say this. Whenever I have been disciplined enough to just like put my phone down and like leave it in another room and like not be on it for hours at a time, I feel a million times better. Like things just feel so much better. I'm just like in whatever moment I'm in, and I'm, you know, giving my attention to whether it's other people or anything else that I'm doing, you just feel infinitely better than when you're scrolling whatever, Twitter or Instagram, anything. And so that alone, that like very simple idea of like, I feel much better when I'm not just like on my phone all the time.
Yeah.
Is like, it's I just try to keep that thought with me. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and the internet, you know,
doesn't need to be more complicated than that.
And we're also, and I don't think we're terribly far apart in age, but you know, based on some of the things that you've said, but if you remember when the internet was pretty new and all there was dial up. I mean, for me, like I was probably an adolescent while that was happening, late adolescence. What I started hearing about from the people who dabbled in it and were in the know was all the craziest pornographic darkest shit you could imagine that you can find. I mean, that there's this dark aspect to the internet that has just always existed. And then the other thing is the manipulation of information, which is related to like the deregulation of the media and telecommunications. It has just kind of teed us up for all this, where, you know, there's this algorithm where whatever you follow, that's what you get. And all of a sudden you're living in an echo chamber where you only hear one side of the news.
Yeah.
You know, it's dangerous. That's
The sped up news intake is really very hard to deal with. Like the fact that you're basically just being inundated with information all the time, like from different places and different thoughts, and you know, it all happens very quickly, and it's like, I don't think we're capable of processing.
Well, it's not helpful.
Everything.
It's not.
I do enjoy like reading a newspaper every now and again, like an actual newspaper. If I'm, like if I'm visiting my parents or something in Houston, like they still have a newspaper subscription, where they get the physical paper, and it's like reading the stories the next day, you know, it's like a slower kind of,
well, there's depth to it.
There's depth, and you're just kind of taking it in at a more appropriate pace. Yeah. Feels a lot healthier, honestly, than,
well, the rapidity of the messaging and it's very impulsive, and it doesn't lend itself to actually processing the information. It's just digesting the next headline over and over and over again.
Right.
When, you know, in the last 4 years, it's been about mostly what did he say now?
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
When, if you look back over it, you know, if you really, you know, from a different vantage point, the response is, wow, this all paints a really terrible picture. Mm-hmm. Right. Where day to day, it's like, wow, that was something terrible to say.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, you know, I mean, it's keeping us distracted. And it's another, it probably isn't unrelated to what we were talking about before in terms of addiction and the distraction. It's another way to keep us distracted from, you know, think about all these guys storming Capitol Hill, who are watching, you know, Fox News or worse all the time. Mm-hmm. They're mm-hmm. probably not really thinking about, man, I wish I would have started that robe company when I had the idea. You know, seriously, like, think about how, I mean.
Are they selling just different kinds of rope?
Robe company, I said. Oh, robe. Yeah. No, but like, you know, because they're so sucked into this chaos all the time, and then they're not thinking about, well, I could be doing this with my life, or I could be doing, you know?
I mean, boredom breeds creativity often, you know, like you got to just let your mind process stuff and, you know, eventually it leads you to some interesting places if you let it. And boredom is like a weird, I don't know if that's the right word to use there, but, you know, just quiet, I guess, or just kind of like letting your, like following whatever your mind might lead you, without being led by, you know, an algorithm.
Well, and I don't know. I have friends, and I would bet that you probably have friends who kind of took a wrong turn in life. At some point made some poor decisions. Like I'm thinking of one great friend from high school in particular who kind of sabotaged his marriage, ended up divorced. Probably doesn't do anything directly related for a living that anything he's really interested in or that ignites a fire within him, you know, there's and now, you know, he's got Fox News on 24 hours a day complaining about everything, you know, rather than changing, rather than taking a good hard look at himself and thinking, wow, this isn't, you know, this isn't where I wanted to be. I should do something different. Instead, it's like that, those fucking people, you know. it's really sad. It is because as just as a society, we could all be so much more.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know. I agree.
Well, and the fact that our educational system is the way it is as well, you know, like I actually grew up in a factory town where having an education that prepared you to work on an assembly line kind of made sense until the late 60s, early 70s. But, you know, that's really how we still educate people. And that's not the world, you know?
I think, I agree. I mean, we don't invest, we just don't put our resources into it as much as we should. And I think that's another place that a lot of the problems come from is just we aren't taking care of our people. And like when you're not taking care of your people and, you know, all of the money and the resources are being kind of held by a very small group at the very top, you're gonna, you know, inevitably people are gonna be more susceptible to the batshit crazy stuff that they see on TV or read on the internet. It's like,
well, and then those
they're looking for a place to put their problems.
Right. And those people at the top are telling you who you should blame.
Yeah, exactly. And really it's them.
right. You know. Right.
But, I mean, I think if we like, we're taking better care of the bottom part of society, like if we're, you know, lifting those boats or whatever, like I think everyone would be in a better place, but
yeah.
And I think that, you know, I think that the generations coming up now, like that we have girls or like for the shoe company, we usually have, you know, at least one person who's kind of in their very early 20s, and like you definitely see a difference in the way that they kind of see the world, you know, like they're not so driven by money.
They just kind of want like everyone to treat each other well.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and, I mean, that gives me hope, you know, like I mentioned, having a 14-year-old, I mean, I'm not one who, you know, kids these days, I'm not, you know, I feel like we should be more like them.
Yeah.
We'd all be better off if we were more like them. And yeah, that's what ultimately gives me hope. And, you know, talking about all this, like in order to not just go into some depressed state over all this, like, you know, what can I do? And that's where, for me, like, this comes in. Like, if I can be better and live my authentic path and try to like lead other people down that road and tell people you can do anything you want. And in fact, you should, because the world will be a better place if you do.
Yeah.
That's really, and you know, all we can do is what we do and choose how we're going to respond to life and, perceive the world. And, you know, just like the last thing I say at the end of each episode is be nice.
Yeah, that goes a long way.
Yeah.
Just be nice to the people around you and try to have some.
Yeah, and you don't have to have a reason, and you don't have to know them ahead of time. And, no, you know,
because, well, also selfishly, it feels good.
It does. It does feel good. And
yeah, it's
and
like, you ever done something nice for somebody? It feels pretty good.
It does feel pretty good.
Do more of that.
Yeah. So... Well, this has been great. So the last question I usually ask people is if there was a time in your life when you could go back and the younger Evan needed a word of advice or some support, when would that have been and what would you say to him?
Okay. So I would go back to, it's a good question. I would go back to Evan when he had just graduated from college. And he was still living in Austin by himself. And most of his friends had moved away at that point. I took a little longer to graduate than most, but not too much longer. But I would, you know, I think at that time I was still kind of feeling like I had to be part of like this structure where I needed to go get like a proper job. And so I was still kind of straddling the lines of like, I don't really want to like go get a real job necessarily, or like, I don't want to feel like I have to have it all figured out right now. And then I basically want to go tell myself just like right now, yes, you need to work, support yourself, but you know, focus on the stuff that really makes you happy, like playing music or, you know, being involved in film or something like that. Like just, you have energy, you're young, you have time to figure this out. And if you go kind of seek out the things that make you feel like your authentic self, then that path will find itself, you know? So that's kind of what I would go tell myself.
Well, that's perfect. Well,
I try.
I appreciate you doing this. And
yeah, of course.
And I love what you're doing, and I don't have one of your robes yet, but I promise I will.
Yeah. I think that needs to happen.
Though. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
No, it was really fun talking. I appreciate you reaching out, and you know, this was my first podcast, my first podcast guesting experience. So.
Well, I hope it was everything that you hoped for. And
yeah,
it was
great.
Anytime you want to come back, I'd be more than happy to have you.
Okay. Sure.
All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
Right, there you go, Evan Struzand. So, got plenty more good stuff to come. again, please join the podcast mailing list. Be a huge help. Leave a rating, review at Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, really wherever you're willing to leave positive feedback. I'll take it. You can subscribe, like, follow, whatever, at Amazon, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Listen Notes, Overcast, Pandora, Podbay, Podcast Addict, Radio Public, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can also find the show on YouTube. If you know someone who would enjoy this episode or another episode, if they'd enjoy the show in general, please share it with them. Word of mouth is really how the show has grown to the degree that it has thus far. So, every little bit helps. I want to thank the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. Thank you to our sponsors, the Manor and Windrose Recovery. Thank you to Wendy Chin at Equivox for digital support, web design, and the Path to Authenticity is proud to support the iSpeak Media Foundation. If you have questions or comments, you can call 561-247-4757 and leave a message. I'd love to hear from you. Value any feedback you have to offer. Again, that's 561-247-4757. For early access to the newest episode, as well as unedited interviews, you can support the show on Patreon. That's patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. And you can gain access to that supplemental content for as little as $1 a month. Please visit the website, thepathtoauthenticity.com. Got some new bells and whistles there. You can email the show at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. I'm trying to do some more stuff with lives on Instagram. And I have a couple new projects in the works that I'm going to be playing with on Instagram Live. You can find some Spotify playlists associated with the show. I have a Saturday playlist now in addition to the Sunday playlist that I've been updating fairly regularly for a while now. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed Evan. I sure did. Thanks again, Evan, for taking part in this. Got lots of great stuff coming up. I appreciate you guys. Have a good week. Be nice.
Crawled through the desert for days and days. turned over, started new again.
Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.